Investing in real estate is supported by Wonder Capital, an award-winning online investment platform that allows individuals to invest in solar energy projects across the United States. Earn up to 11% annually while diversifying your portfolio, curbing pollution, and combating global climate change. Create an account for free at wondercapital.com. That's Wonder with a U, W-U-N-D-E-R, Wonder Capital. Do well and do good. Hey, everyone. Welcome once again to another episode of Investing in Real Estate. I'm your host, Clayton Morris, and this is the podcast where we stay focused, laser focused on buy and hold investing. Whether it's something that you do yourself or you use a turnkey provider and you get help from other people, it doesn't matter. We're focused on building long-term legacy wealth, passive income, but we focus exclusively on buy and hold real estate. And now buy and hold real estate can come in many forms, right? It could be mobile home investing. It could be single family homes like what I buy. It could be multifamilies, which a lot of investors buy. It could be commercial properties, whatever it happens to be. I get a lot of questions though from international investors on a regular basis. Hey, I would love to buy U.S. real estate. I live in Australia. I live in Canada. There are seem to be a, quite a bit of hurdles that we need to climb over in order to invest in real estate in the United States. Well, it doesn't have to be that complicated, but there are a few extra hurdles that people need to jump over in order to invest in the United States. Well, that is what today's episode is all about. And even if you're not an international investor, I think you're going to learn a lot from today's episode. So I would love for you to listen in, even if you're not an international investor. My guest today is Reed Goossens. He is an Aussie, but he's moved to the United States and he has built a real estate investing company, which invests in large multifamily units. And he syndicates it. That means that if you're in the United States, you could buy in. If you're international, you could buy in. So he knows the tricks of the trade of investing cross-border. So we're going to drill deep today and answer some of those very specific questions about cross-border real estate investing. Reed, welcome to the show.
G'day, Clayton. Thanks for having me on.
Well, it's a real pleasure. So you are a transplant.
That is correct. I actually moved to the United States for love. My fiance is American, and I've been living in the United States for a bit under 5 years now. Really, really loving it.
So how did you get started in real estate investing? Were you doing it in Australia? And I should preface this by saying, you know, I work with a lot of Australian investors and folks from New Zealand as well. I know you guys don't think of them as one and the same, but it's that neck of the world. But I know that real estate over there is incredibly expensive. So the types of houses Correct. That I buy for $30,000, $40,000, $50,000, they like to say you couldn't even get a fishing shack for that amount of money over there. What about you? Did you start over there?
Exactly. No. Yeah. Well, the it all really did start when I came back from traveling overseas, and I was my background's in structural engineering, and in 2009, 2010, picked up that old book, Rich Dad Poor Dad, as everyone has inspired a lot of people, and I started attending a lot of networking events in Australia, but at the same time, I had my American girlfriend, who is now my fiance, and so in 2012, I'd educated myself a little bit. I was going to pull my trigger on a property in Australia, but then I was like, I still really wanted to live in New York City, so I picked up my life and I moved across the world with my girlfriend. And I landed in New York City, was in New York City for I think 2 weeks before I was at my first real estate networking event, just learning about US real estate. And I actually purchased my first deal at the end of 2012 in upstate New York. It was a similar deal to what you were doing, but it was a triplex and it was for $55,000. And I did a bit of rehab to it but I had to pay all cash for that because, you know, moving to the United States, I don't have any credit. So there was a whole learning curve that I went through to try and build up my credit and, you know, get an understanding real estate investing. And that's gone on to sort of help start my business and now where I am today.
So that first deal, tell me about it. So it was all cash, $55,000. What was your total all-in cost on that property? And how did you find that deal?
Yeah, that deal was just New York City is obviously very, very expensive. I said to myself, well, if I can drive 4 hours in any direction, I'll invest. And 4 hours in any direction is Syracuse, New York. And it was just a market that I could afford. And I picked the deal up for, I think, about a bit under $40,000. I put about 12 grand into it. $12,000 to $15,000 into it, and I was able to increase the cash flow, which was awesome. And that's really where I cut my teeth on multifamily or small multifamily deals, and just the power of U.S. real estate and the low barriers to entry here in the United States, which you guys, all your listeners out there should be very, very, pat themselves on the back, but should be very, very proud of the fact that you can invest in such cheap properties and make such a great ROI or return on investment. So yeah.
Right. So I'm sorry, did you say how you found that deal? You were looking, I know, for...
Yeah, I found that deal through another friend of mine in a networking event in New York City, and it just really came about of, well, I chose the market. It wasn't anything special about the market. It was just that I could drive there and I could afford it. That was really what I wanted to get. I wanted to get my feet wet. I was at the analysis paralysis stage of real estate investing. I'd been learning for it for about 2009, 2010. I picked up the book. It was 2012, so a bit over 2 years of just analysis paralysis. And I just thought to myself, I need to get a deal done. So I reached out to a bunch of brokers, and I went up, six, seven, eight times to Syracuse from New York over weekends because I was still working full time. And yeah, just through brokers and my network that I created up in Syracuse, I'd sorted a lot of properties. I underwrote a lot of properties, and then I finally pulled the trigger on this triplex. So yeah, it was just a bit of more networking.
Perfect. Yeah. And I talk about the power of obviously the real estate investing meetings in your local market. Mm-hmm. Just by going to meetup.com, you can just do a local search. You can find some great investors who are in your area. If they meet once a month, you just go have a beer with them, sit down, literally bring business cards with you, and take, a pen with you, and any business cards that people hand out to you, write a little note on the back of their business card and follow up with them. And that's how you can really start to, learn your local market and really expand like you did. So you got this through a broker, actually, a real estate agent. What did you say to that real estate agent when you reached out to that person initially? Did you come to that person with some specific criteria you were looking for? And if so, what was that criteria?
Yeah, good question. I came to them with just sort of, I knew I wanted to buy a duplex, at least a duplex, something that was going to able to produce not a significant amount, but a good portion of income. And I wanted like a side by side, so not a unit on the bottom, a unit on the top. I wanted a left and a right hand duplex, because I found that renters, if you're living on top of one another, they can get annoyed with one another, people walking up above them, and it can cause headaches. So the best advice I got from one of my friends was, you need a duplex side by side. And so that's what I went out to my broker with, and I said, hey, do you reckon you can find me something, something with a bit of value add to it, and something that's going to be out of cash flow for me, and sort of a class C neighborhood or C minus neighborhood. And that's really all it was. And it was just a matter of going through a lot of properties, walking a lot of properties, seeing a lot of, stuff that I've never seen in my, back in Australia. We didn't have the old HVAC systems that you go, those spider HVAC systems with the asbestos issues. There was just a big learning curve and understanding all that different stuff. Being an Aussie, it was just awesome. And it was just, I just learned so much in those first couple of years just doing little property tours of houses in Syracuse.
That's great. You buy in the same neighborhoods I do. My favorite neighborhoods are C neighborhoods and occasionally a B neighborhood. But C are always the, talk to any high-level investor we've had here on the show, C neighborhoods are their favorite neighborhoods. But when people ask that question all the time, what is a C neighborhood to you? Mm-hmm. And there's really no hard and fast answer to that. But how would you answer that question?
Yeah, good. That's another good question. I tend to look at it like class A is where we all want to live. The Santa Monicas, the New York City, the downtown Brooklyns, the Williamsburgs in New York. This class B neighborhood is an up and coming neighborhood, I'd like to say. Sort of more gentrification is happening. If you lost your day job, you may want to rent there. But you had, or you had to downsize, or you had to, tighten up the financial belt, you may move to a class B neighborhood. A class C neighborhood would be somewhere where if you lost your day job and you had to move there and you really, your chips were down, you'd move into that neighborhood. But it wouldn't be, you may not want to be seen at night there. And then class D is obviously just, you wouldn't go there at all. So you'd rather pitch a tent. So that's how I like to class it. And it's typically, from white collar class A to blue collar class C. So,
right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. That's how, that's a good way to describe it. I like that. That if you, up and coming is a good way to describe B neighborhoods, right on the cusp. Yeah. And C is really where I get the most value. Almost every property I own, I think every property I own is in a C neighborhood. So that's
same,
great.
Yeah.
Now you mentioned, like the HVAC system. I'm sure that there must have been, obviously coming from Australia where it's what, like, it's like in the shade, it's like 140 degrees, right? So coming to Syracuse where you get like 10 feet of snow in upstate New York. You know, I've had friends who went to Syracuse University. My dad lived in Buffalo. I mean, you know, your car would be covered mm-hmm. in snow. So what was that like?
Exactly. Yeah, it was really my, eye opening. I just really educating myself on these older properties that, you know, I was looking at stuff that were in class C neighborhoods, but they were really, you know, built before the 1940s and they just were dated. And it's just stuff that you just don't see as much in Australia, because of where I lived. We're a smaller country. We're not as large. We don't have you've got 400 million people here. I think we only have 25 million people. Historically, I think the United States is a little bit older than Australia. So those historical neighborhoods or those old pre 2000 and World War II properties do not exist as much as they do here in the United States. There's not the rust belt, as they like to say in quotations. So that was just sort of more educating on the different systems, the HVAC systems, the asbestos, the lead piping, the different electrical boxes to look out for and outlets and what how much is going to cost you. And that sort of education really, really helped me. And just, you know, walking properties with contractors and understanding what this is going to cost to get this thing done.
Right. In New Jersey, I do a lot of wholesaling in the state of New Jersey where I live. I never would buy an investment property here, but wholesaling I do for flippers. And of course, one of the big issues you'll notice in the basement, and it's also a good bargaining tactic too, to talk to a motivated seller, is that they don't even realize sometimes that they have that asbestos wrapping around the pipes in their basement. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like a white, almost like sock, really thick sock wrapped around the piping, you know. And a lot of people don't even notice that they have that, or they don't know what it is, but that is asbestos. And you may even have asbestos tile in the basement that people don't know. And it can be costly to remove. It can be a pain to remove. The old piping as well. So what we do on our properties is, you know, we're ripping out the old plumbing and putting in new, like, PEX plumbing, PEX. And of course, we have to, you know, remove the asbestos. If you know it's there, you've got to get it out of there.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So I want to talk about now diving into when you started moving from just, you know, those individual properties into your business, when you started investing in and buying large multifamily units. How did that start for you?
Yeah, another good question. So when I saw the power of increasing, doing that bit of sweat equity and increasing the cash flow, I also at the same time was able to slightly force the appreciation of that triplex that I first bought, which was then enabled me, or I could prove to the bank that I could refi some of my money out, and then I bought a couple of more properties with for $20,000 and $30,000 respectively. But then I really thought to myself, well, why not the economy of scale? If I can do it on three, why can't I do it on 50 or 100? And so that really got me thinking. And at the same time, there was a little bit of with some of the turnkey providers, some Australian investors had been burnt, and the model was that I wanted to syndicate because I was boots on the ground. I could speak Aussie, or I could talk the talk in Australia, but I could also talk the talk here in the United States. And financing is can be sometimes very, very difficult for international investors. So syndicating was just a natural progression of using other people's money, which I love, but using a bit of my own money, and then I would get the financing, and international investors or even American investors wouldn't have to worry about the financing. And that's sort of how it stemmed into the business that I have today.
So explain to our audience what syndicating actually is. We've talked about it here on the show in a few different times with Susan Lasseter-Lyons. She owns, you know, many, many hundreds of properties, and she does a lot of syndication deals. But explain that a little bit more for our audience.
Yeah, sure thing. It's in its simplest form, it's just pooling investors' money together, and it's like co-investing. Everyone is a partner, and you might pool five of your buddies some money together. They might have $100,000 each, and you know that's five of them, so it's $500,000. Now, because you have now have $500,000 rather than your own $100,000, you can go and buy a larger deal, which can cash flow for you, and that sort of and everyone sort of profits from that because everyone's a co-partner and because they're co-investing. So in its simplest form, it's just pooling investors' money together to buy a large deal.
Okay, now I want to dive into some tips. Before we got here on the show, we talked about a number of tips for international investors that we could walk through, and I'm sure some of them are probably scratching their head. Well, okay, how do I do this? What is the first step? So take us through a couple of the tips that international investors would need to do in order to invest in U.S. real estate.
Yep, I would love to. So the first major step that people need to identify when they come to the United States is what they want to invest in. There's a lot of opportunities to invest in. I know, Clayton, you do your turnkey properties. I'm in the multifamily space. There's mobile home parks. There's, you know, it's just such a plethora of investment opportunities. The number one thing that I see international investors come to the United States for is for cash flow. So once you've developed what you want for cash flow, the next thing is to identify, okay, well, I need to get set up. And before I can even start looking at deals, I need to get set up. And that, you know, I like to call it the back end. And international investors need to go through a couple of steps. And the first step is to contact a good CPA. And part of my business is I help international investors get set up here in the United States. And they help them through my third-party referrals. They help them get what's called an ITIN number. And an ITIN number is an individual tax identification number. And it's just a number that the IRS gives to you. And it's a number that you say, well, hey, IRS, I'm an international investor. I'm coming to the United States. I want to invest in your country and I want to pay taxes. So the IRS will assign you an ITIN number. Once you have that, you'll set up an LLC. That's pretty straightforward. And you'll start setting up bank accounts. Now, once you've got all that set up and you know it takes a period of time, maybe 4 to 6 to 8 weeks to get that from, you know, from go to wo. You then will want to transfer some of your money from, you know, wherever the country is, your foreign country, Europe, Asia, Australia, Canada, into your new bank account here in the United States. And then once you've done all those steps, then you can start looking at deals because you've sort of got your guns ready to as they say, ready aim fire. And then you start looking at different deals and you start executing and buying properties.
So on the bank account issue, I know I literally just had this exact question from one of our Canadian investors who is purchasing properties with us, and they, you know, just have to set up and well, how should we structure this and what's the best way to do that? So on the bank account issue, could you address that a little bit for our audience?
Yeah. So the U.S. Banking system did tighten its belts up. You do back in the day, you know, back in the late 2009, 2010, 2011, you could still open a bank account internationally. These days, you do have to come to the United States and be present, and you have to show your passport and you have to show, you know, reason why you're opening your bank account here. I work with a few different smaller banks that help us, and that's another reason why I syndicate, is because I can add people to my bank account. Even if they're international. So there's just, if you're doing it individually, you can do it. You just got to come to the United States. Unfortunately, that's the only way to get around it these days.
So you've got to come to the United States to do it. Yeah.
Yeah. There are some other ways. You know, typically I work with a lot of foreign exchange companies, and they will transfer the money from an international company to their bank account in the United States. And then that you can tell them which bank account to send it to. It could be an escrow account. It could be your own bank account. It could be, you know, your partner's bank account. But it also works the other way. They can receive rental checks for you, and then they can transfer it back into your foreign account. Currency. So there are different ways around it, and I definitely walk through all the different options with all my clients when they reach out to me.
That's great. And now on the syndication piece and the types of returns that you're looking for, when you enter into a deal, what are you looking for yourself and for your clients?
Yeah, in terms of returns, I offer what's called a preferred return to all my investors, which is the first X percent of cash flow is paid to investors, and then we have a projection. So typically, I like to see cash on cash return once it's stabilized, 9 to 10%. From a project level. So that means I can pay my preferred return of 8%, and I look for an IRR, an internal rate of return, of above 18%. So that's what I look for across different markets throughout the United States and through different investment opportunities.
And now, is that something that's paid monthly?
Quarterly.
Okay. I want to pause here and thank one of our show sponsors this week, Wonder Capital. What if you could help combat global climate change and make money at the same time? Well, that's Wonder Capital, the award-winning online investment platform that allows individuals to invest in solar energy projects across the United States. I think this is fantastic, and my wife and I are actually doing this right now. Wonder's online investment platform allows you to earn up to 11% annually while diversifying your portfolio. So if you've got real estate, maybe you've got stocks in the stock market, Wonder Capital lets you do this and diversify your portfolio. It'll help you curb pollution and combat global climate change all at the same time, so you can feel good about your investment. And your investment in Wonder's fully managed solar investment fund, it goes directly to helping U.S. small and medium-sized businesses install solar panels in their companies. This is amazing. If you ever drive past one of those parking lots that has solar panels in it, it's usually a huge business. Well, what if you're a small business or a medium-sized business that wants to do it? That's where Wonder Capital comes in. So as those businesses repay their loans to Wonder, you receive monthly payments directly deposited into your bank account. And best of all, Wonder Capital doesn't take any fees for investing your money. No fees. So create an account for free today. Just go to wondercapital.com/Clayton. That's WUNDER with a U, wondercapital.com/Clayton. Wonder Capital, do well and do good. We thank them for their support. And the types of deals you're looking at now, where are you finding your deals, and what type, you know, do you have a minimum threshold that you enter into?
Yeah. So investors, the minimum investment for our investors is $50,000 to invest in one of our deals, and they will become a limited partner in a property. In terms of where I'm finding my deals, I've been in Texas, Houston and Dallas market. I'm also branching out into Kansas City market, and I do like some other markets in terms of Raleigh, North Carolina, and I'm looking actively at another market in Jacksonville, Florida. So, but they're depending on what size property. So the Dallas deals and the Houston deals are typically over 100 units. In the Kansas City market, I'm looking at stuff that is under 100 units. So it really just depends on what deal flow I need at that particular time.
Now, explain to me the difference when you've got obviously a syndication deal. Are you managing that property as the head of the syndicate? Is that something you're managing? Is that something you've brought in a property management team to handle? And does someone who lives in Australia or Canada who's investing with you, or even in the United States, are they actively involved in that process at all?
Yeah, so we have a property management company that works for us. We, as what's called the general partner, me and my partners, we will run the deal. So we'll be the asset managers. We'll oversee the property management, and they will make sure they're doing their job. In terms of the investors, they take a more of a passive role. Yes, they can be involved or understand the process, but because we have a lot of investors in any one deal with $50,000 minimum investment, you tend to have a lot of investors. So we typically keep them on the passive side, and a lot of our investors like that because they don't have to do any of the hard work. They're entering into the deal at ground level, so they're going to get all the forced appreciation that we do our job correctly. We go and rehab the units, we reduce the operating expenses, then that in turn increases the cash flow and then increases the value of the property. So international investors or any investors just love that, you're going to do all the hard work. Great. We'll take the back seat, so to say.
Right, right. I mean, that's and how I built our company too, which is like, you don't have to do anything. We'll handle everything for you.
Exactly.
Now, and there's beauty in that, and especially if you can get those types of returns, which is great. So let me explain to me too on the tax side. So if I – for instance, one of our investors buys, property through us, they own whatever, a $40,000 to $50,000 home. And obviously they get all the tax benefits of owning that property, by themselves.
Correct.
Or in their LLC. Mm-hmm. How does it affect them if they buy, if they buy into a 100-unit complex with 30 or maybe 15 other people? How are they able to claim that on their taxes? And what are the just broader sort of financial implications about buying into that?
Yes, still the same principles apply, and that is, you know, each investor will set have an LLC that they'll invest into the major LLC that will own that property. So on all our properties, we will start a new LLC, and then investors will buy a portion of that LLC, and it's a flow-through system. So any of the tax benefits that come from the, you know, depreciation, any sort of you know, amortization that we have, all flows straight through to the investors, and that they will receive a K-1 at the end of the tax year, and that will take that to their tax accountant and say, okay, well, this is how much you earned from this investment this particular year. You have, you know, you own a portion of the deal, so you have the portion of the depreciation and all the associated benefits. In terms of international investors, that is something that, you know, I know a little bit about the Australian taxation and how it works, but, you know, I'm not an expert by any means, but at the end of the day, you will still have to have an accountant in your home country, and you know, you'll still have to say, well, look, I earned, you know, 10, 15, 20 grand of, you know, cash flow from my investments in the United States, and that will go into, you know, your, you know, they will then analyze it for you and tell you how much, you know, you are owing on taxes in your home country.
Are they your international investors? Are they paying taxes in the United States, and then also then in their home country? Is that
So what happens is that it goes into what United States and Australia are part of a treaty. Again, I'm not an expert, but this is from my understanding, is that if I have properties in Australia and United States, and I have a job in Australia, and I'm an Australian investor who buys US investments, it goes into a pool, right? So they will say, well, your global income is X, and that will then be divvied up. So if you pay taxes on your income from your profits from the cash flow and properties in America, that will be a tax credit in Australia when it comes, because you've already paid those taxes in America, and sort of like it's a global treaty, if that makes sense.
Right.
So like, think of it like a big bucket, and it's a catch-all around the world, and then it's sort of divvied up to because you've got to pay the taxes in that particular country for whatever that investment is. But then wherever the resident is, wherever you reside, you get like credits for when you do your taxes in that home country.
That's fascinating. I want to talk a little bit about risks. I get this question occasionally, and mm-hmm. I address it this way. For me, you know, I find buy and hold investing is one of the least risky investments I think you can make. I don't know if you'll agree with me or not, but that's why I've moved the bulk of my investing into real estate. And really, at the end of the day, if you're buying correctly, which you are, whether it's upstate New York or middle America, mid markets like we do, and you're buying correctly, and you're not overpaying, you're getting a nice return, and you've got insurance on the property. You know, yes, the tenant could burn down the property, and fortunately you have insurance, which then would cover that to either take that money and buy something else, or rebuild, or whatever. Maybe you have a vacancy, which you account for in your overall ROI formula to begin with. So. Yep. Other than that, like, I don't, you know, can you help me understand what are the risks involved in, you know, in buying into a syndication or mm-hmm. just in general with your real estate investing?
Yeah, so I love investing in commercial real estate because banks value cash flow. And for all your listeners out there who are not maybe as familiar with commercial real estate, just say, for example, I have a 100-unit property, and I can go to the bank and God forbid I fall over tomorrow and I die, right? The property is underwritten to the point because it's viewed as a business, and so it can sustain it can service the debt, right? It can service, you know, the 4 or 5% debt, and so banks will always be there to, you know, lend you money on commercial property. However, in residential, it's sort of the shoes on the other foot, and they sort of look at you, the borrower, and say, "Hey, how can you service this debt?" So, if you can't service the debt through renters or through an income from your job, and something happens to you and you can't service that debt, well, then you can potentially default on your loan, and that's a risk. That's why I like investing in commercial real estate, because I value cash flow, like you do, Clayton. You value cash flow,
right?
So banks will always be there, and you can always service the debt, so there shouldn't be any issue. Now, again, we can do a whole episode on how to mitigate tenant risk and, you know, all right. those other things that go market risk. But at the end of the day, if you value cash flow and you are, as you say, buy and holding for a long period of time, it really, really is the least risk, one of the least riskiest investments that I've come across. Plus, you get all the benefits of investing in real estate. I don't think there's any other investment vehicle that can offer amortization, depreciation, cash flow, and I'm forgetting the fourth one right now. But right. And so that is just so super you know, simple, and it's key to investing in real estate, and why you and I both invest and have longevity wealth building creation, you know, in our lifetime, which is awesome.
So on a syndication deal, I like to say I'm buying my properties and holding them till I die and then transferring them mm-hmm. to my children. I don't intend to sure. ever sell my properties. If you're part of a syndicate, do you have rights to decide when that property is sold? How long do you typically hold that? 10 years, 8 years, or for life?
Yeah, good question. So the current business model is that we will go in and buy a property that it needs a bit of value add to it. We will do that value add over a period of 18 months to 2 years. We will increase the cash flow, which will then increase the value of the property significantly. We will then look to refi the property and pay a portion of our investors back, and then hold the property for the next 5 to 7 years. We typically have an end point, just so with our investors can, you know, they can see that some money is coming back at some point. It's not just indefinite. But we do, as being the general partners, we will decide when it's right to make sense. Now, we have our own money in the deal, so we want to do right by ourselves. We also want to do right by our investors, because, you know, we that's our business here. So right. Our business is syndication.
Wonderful. I'll get you out of here on this question. Where do you see the U.S. market going in rental real estate? I don't care about the retail market at all. the rental real estate markets in the United States, where do you see things going in the next 2 years?
Yeah, good question. We can talk again. We have a whole other episode on this about the home ownership in the United States is dwindling. If you're not abroad about all the issues going on here in the United States and the middle class, then turn on any television. I'm sure you'll find out. But yeah, home ownership is dwindling here in the United States. Renting is going through the roof. Rental demand is continuing to grow. And if you provide a product to your renters that is clean, safe, affordable, then you're always going to have people renting, and renting is going to continue to grow and grow and grow as it becomes harder and harder for the middle class, or just for anyone to buy real estate in a primary residence. So I think over the next 2 years and beyond, the rental demand will continue to grow. So that is, and everyone needs a roof over their heads at the end of the day. So that's why I love investing in residential, residential, commercial, multifamily.
Yeah. Well said. We need food and we need a roof over our head, and they've got to live somewhere. So why shouldn't they exactly. live in one of your properties? Great. Well, Reed, it's been a real treat having you here on the show and giving. I've learned quite a bit, and I know that our audience has as well, about international investing and investing in syndication deals. Tell us how people can get a hold of you.
Yeah, sure thing. You can reach out to me directly at Reed, R-E-E-D, at rsnpropertygroup.com. Hit me up there if you're ever in Los Angeles. I'm always interested to meet up and talk shop. As you like to say, Clayton, networking. So, yeah.
That's right. And we'll have links to everything Reed was talking about here in our show notes page. So just go to the episode, click on Reed's show notes page on our website, and we'll have links to everything we just talked about and links to Reed's website as well. Reed, thanks so much for joining us on the show. We really appreciate it.
Awesome, Clayton. Thank you so much for having me.
You bet. And thanks to all of you for downloading and subscribing to this podcast. We always appreciate all of your feedback, and your kind emails are always welcome. If you would like to check out our Freedom Cheat Sheet, it's the free 3-page PDF that really changed my whole life. And, you know, I talk about my freedom number here on the show often. If you've not downloaded that, please head over to morrisinvest.com/freedom. It's a free download. You can download it, sit down with your husband, wife, and figure out exactly how many rental properties and cash flow you would need to cover your monthly expenses. We look forward to having you back here. We publish the show a couple times a week, as you know, Monday, Wednesday, and Thursday. And we'll see you back here on the next episode of Investing in Real Estate. Have a great one, everyone. Much love.